What's going on, guys? Welcome back. We're back. It's Wednesday, and we're here to talk Den of Thieves. I am so excited to talk about this movie. Jerry Butler's back. He's on the screen, and we are here to break it down for you, the Action Army. We'll see you guys in just one second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! Life is made better by Still Dre every single time.
Every day.
Every day of my life.
And by Gerard. Thursday.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It's Action Movie Anatomy. We're live. It's Wednesday. We're excited. We're covering a brand new movie.
Anytime we talk Gerard, Denzel, or Tom Cruise on the show, it's always a very exciting week.
It makes me so happy that Gerard Butler has reached the status on our show that he has.
He's surpassed Nick.
Yeah. And he really has. Cage was like one of the OGs.
It was Cage and Cruise, and Denzel kind of worked his way in there, and now it's just Denzel, Cruise, and 100% Butler.
He's the guy. So what's up, everybody? It's Action Movie Anatomy here on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, pop culture, and doing it by the bucketful. We are excited. It's Den of Thieves. It's a big STX film.
Yeah, it's like a movie that like we probably wouldn't have wanted to do Gerard wasn't in it.
Oh, for sure.
But he is.
If they had like, I don't know, if like Gyllenhaal starred, the same cast, but like Gyllenhaal instead of Butler or like someone, maybe.
It would have been directed by Fuqua.
Yeah, it would have. Probably. And then we would have covered that movie.
Yeah, it's true.
So, guys, 2017, Den of Thieves, Christian Gudegast makes his directorial debut. It's a big one. This is Action Movie Anatomy, and we cover action movies on the show. Those action movies, you hear four basic rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Yeah, big time.
That's a definition of Gerard Butler in movies.
What's his name, Nick Sullivan? Nicko?
I don't know. I just call him Mike Banning now.
Yeah. Big Mike. Big Nick. Big Nick. He plays by his own rules. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, what have you, in the room. Anytime you rip off Heat, you're going to have a smart hero and a smart villain.
Yeah, Pablo Schreiber or technically O'Shea Jackson.
Yeah, true.
And then Gerard Butler is definitely...
He knows what he's
something.
Doing. He knows what he's doing.
He can stay on his feet while he's drunk and high all the time.
Yeah, it's awesome. Rule number three, the movie is driven by police, military, political, or mercenary figure. Yeah, absolutely. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Yeah, there's at least one blow up.
Yeah.
They blow up some ground.
Exactly.
And there's, I think, like one other one I'm maybe forgetting.
Blow up some ground.
Yeah.
sounds sick.
So, guys, if you're tuning in for the very first time, this is Action Movie Anatomy, and we talk, action movies here. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, you guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter and Instagram. You can find the podcast on Twitter at AMA Podcast. And you can find our Facebook fan page, the Action Movie Anatomy fan page, where we have tons of polls, interaction. We've got all of it going on. We also got something else that we've been doing these last few weeks.
Yeah, we just launched a Patreon. Not an Action Movie Anatomy Patreon, necessarily. It's the Action Army Patreon. So Andrew and I both perform in the Movie Trivia Schmodown, the trivia competition. So there's a kind of a different Facebook page for that, the Action Army page, started by some wonderful fans.
Yep.
And so we are doing exclusive content. We're filming it on our own, and it is on a Patreon. So if you pay a dollar a month, you get access to this content, patreon.com/teamaction.
Yeah.
And so we've done a couple things now. We did a top 10 best cast characters in the history of the MCU.
Yeah, we did did predictions for the Oscars this year.
Oscars predictions. The Schmodown Season 5 kicks off this Friday. So today, a video will be going up of Andrew and I in our Team Action glory discussing and predicting the first three matches of the year.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what I've separated myself from the Schmodown entirely since our last loss. So I don't even know who some of these people are. I'm excited to go and I'm excited for the video to go up and see what happens.
It's going
to
be good. Yeah. So if you guys are members of the Patreon, you'll see that going up tonight. And if you're not, you should get in. It's like there's all these different tiers. If you pay a buck, you just get all the content. For five, we'll take any of your top five lists and we'll share them on the channel, kind of react to like your top five favorite movies.
We've got a couple good top five lists already from some of our biggest fans. And then, guys, big shout out. Next week, we are doing. I know. Well, should we save it?
We'll save it.
Thanks to Paul DeNuzzo, though. We'll just throw that out there.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
So, anyway, that's the big news. That's what's been going on with the show. But we are going to get straight into Den of Thieves. We're very excited to talk about this one. So before we do anything else, I do want to let you guys know, coming up on the show today, we'll be talking about our top five heist movies each. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about three shocking twists at the end of films, some of our favorites of all time. We'll be pitching the ideal Gerard Butler kids movie. Each of us, 30 seconds or less. And then finally, we'll be doing all the other fun stuff, thesis statement, favorite line. So let's get straight into the show. Marissa Serafini, longtime contributor to the show, engineer. She's up in the booth. What's up, Marissa?
What's up, guys? Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Marissa. Marissa actually loves this trailer.
And you love Jerry.
I do love the trailer. I think it's well edited, so.
You're a big Jerry Butler fan, right?
I am.
You can't call him Jerry anymore.
Daryl does that, and I'm so pleased that he does it. Twice he said to me, I'm like, yeah, I'm talking to Gerard Butler this week. And he's like, Jerry's a great interview. I'm like, okay, if I'm on a first name basis,
he's gonna call Jerry.
I gotta call him Jerry. So I gotta match Daryl's.
That's amazing. All right, gonna hop into the trailer here.
Hey,
so good.
Pay attention. This is yours. Most important thing: keep your finger off the trigger at all times, unless you need to shoot somebody. When that happens,
3170, we're being held up.
Hold it until you run dry.
I like Pablo Schreiber a lot.
Yeah, you saw it. The other, you were asking me where he came from.
It's Orange is the New Black.
That's the other one I forgot to mention.
So I've watched every episode of that show,
yeah,
and he looks so different.
Yeah, that's the other big one.
Nick, original gangster cop in the flesh.
What's he's having such a hard time
placing him in the hospital.
I tell you, he's a bad guy. I'm going to make you a deal. Give me the names of all the guys that got away. I'll get you a medic.
I know, snitch.
Yo.
He's done, son.
This movie is
we got a problem.
So
crime.
Close to being really, really good.
Every big time crew
it's so close.
These are the guys who
being
down.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just not.
A lot of the best parts are really awesome. A lot of the action's great. I do actually really like Gerard as the lead. I think he's a totally solid.
Yeah, I just couldn't figure out who I was rooting for the whole movie. You know what I mean?
I don't love the supporting cast is the biggest problem. I don't... Yeah.
It's like Fort Knox.
Yeah. Although I like Pablo a lot, actually.
There's anywhere between $500 and $800 billion in there. Every millimeter of it.
Though, a better... Like, honestly, a more notable second lead would have been a more intense villain. I like Pablo, but if you think about putting, like, one of our favorites, like somebody we really love,
yeah,
Cargo would have made the movie better.
Tom Hardy.
Down.
You know what this means? It means I am a member of a gang. Only we have bad.
The regulators.
Means you are.
We're just criminals.
I'm a vest. Do you look like the types who arrest you?
No one put that seat on.
Put you in handcuffs, drag you down to the station.
Sin made me miss my Mustang.
Just shoot you. You're not the bad guys. We are.
So you put your hand up on your opposite shoulder to steady yourself, I assume,
because
the caliber is so high.
Yeah.
Just crazy kickback.
Yeah.
I feel like if I put my hand up like that, my arm would just blow off.
Yeah, that is sweet. That scene is really sweet. I like that they're all like they're all military trained.
It's one of the cooler parts.
Yeah, because in the very beginning for the first shootout, you're like, oh, these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they're not just normal.
Yeah, agreed.
And Gerard knows too.
He knows too. And he's impressed by their
yes, he is.
Brilliant tactician. All right, so
got another one of those donuts.
That's incredible. All right, so we're gonna get straight into the first part of the show here. You guys watch the trailer. It's a good trailer, actually. It's an intriguing trailer.
It is a very good trailer. It's much better than the movie, honestly.
Yeah,
the movie's still good, but it's a good trailer.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun episode to talk about because there's a lot to unpack here. So we're gonna continue straight through it. We're gonna start with our very first segment of the show. This is called Thesis Statement. Those of you that watched the show before, you know, thesis statement is your biggest, boldest, broadest thought about the film, something that is all-encompassing that if the movie came up in a conversation, this is where you'd start. If you were featured on CNN and they were like, we've got Andrew Guy, host of Action Movie Anatomy, with his thoughts on Geostorm.
Thanks for having me here, Tom.
Geostorm. So you'd share your one big thought, and it should be very bold, the greatest is the only this, something like that, never my favorite is this. And so, do you want to go first, or shall I?
I think you should go first.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Den of Thieves is the most recent total ripoff of Heat, and like all ripoffs, completely fails to capture what made Heat great.
Yeah.
And I can describe exactly what it was. And it's not really a sin that this movie commits that is easy to avoid, because I totally enjoyed this movie, and I think we're going to talk about a lot of the sweetest parts. But people just, like, forget. They don't remember that Heat was the first time we had ever had a movie that had Robert De Niro and Al Pacino going head to head and on screen at the same time together.
Right.
It's the first time that it ever happened.
Right. It was almost like it didn't even matter the movie was there. It was just the two guys going head to head.
At the time that movie was made, and to be totally fair to Michael Mann, at that point in his career, Michael Mann had made movies people liked, but he wasn't Michael Mann yet. He was what made him Michael Mann. The last movie he had made before that was Last of the Mohicans, which had been successful, but not like a classic.
Right.
Prior to that, Manhunter was, you know, kind of a little bit of a... So he wasn't... It wasn't just like, put these two guys... It just so happened that Michael Mann was brilliant with what he wanted to do in that movie, and it worked, and these two guys were the best, biggest ever.
Yeah.
So it worked. You had all these incredible drama scenes and all the cat and mouse stuff and all the buildup. So when you finally had the scenes with those two guys, really, that movie's about the drama. It's about the relationships, the acting.
Yeah, the first time that they sit down is in the diner, which was the first day of shooting. Well, we talked about that because they wanted it to be kind of awkward, and like they shot it like 36 times.
Yeah.
36 times they shot that with two of the greatest actors of all time.
All time.
I guarantee you they didn't shoot any acting scene, dialogue heavy scene in this movie 36 times.
No.
For that purpose.
And so I think when you watch this movie, what's fascinating about it is the action's terrific. Like, I actually think the action sequences in this movie are probably the strongest part. The vision the director had, Christian Gudegast, I was impressed. He definitely, I like the way that he shot LA. I think a lot of his aerial shots look great. They were like totally captured what he wanted.
Isn't it crazy how with drones now you can like up the production value of your movie by millions just because you have a drone?
Yeah.
Where you used to have to have a helicopter and a camera crew, and like it's crazy now.
It's insane. Yeah, those shots look amazing.
They look fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, the city looks great. The first shootout, the violence in the first shootout is awesome. The highway shootout is really cool.
Totally great. Yeah, yeah. That one at the end with that, you said the shot in the trailer with the big gun. Like,
yeah,
it was really cool. And they definitely like executed a lot of the stuff that they wanted to. We'll talk about the action a little more later. But the biggest takeaway for me is that I think about the dramatic scenes in this movie, the relationships, and the ones that were supposed to matter to me the most, and they just don't matter. That's the problem. It's like that's where this movie misses. I don't know if it's miscasting or what, but
it's misdirected writing. Because they spend time on like 50 Cent and his daughter and that scene, even though that scene's fun and it gives, but like if they were able to do something like that for the other characters, because that's like a pretty tight thing, so that when he dies at the end and he says my daughter or whatever, you're kind of like, oh,
right,
you know. And it was really quick and fun and smart, but a lot of the other dialogue where it focuses on like O'Shea Jackson's backstory and Shriver's backstory and like setting up it's just kind of wasted time.
Yeah.
You know,
agreed. Like, yeah, you have these moments they're looking for payoffs, you know, where Mike Banning starts crying in the front seat of his car for a second because he's kind of realizing, you know, it's right after I think he goes to see his daughter for a second, and he's kind of realizing I'm gonna go into this big shootout here and I might die. And, you know, this is what have I done with my life kind of thing.
Yep.
And so they're looking for those big payoff moments, and they're fine. What's interesting about this movie is I think I'd watch it again.
Oh, definitely. I'll watch this movie again.
Yeah.
And I don't say that about a lot of movies.
Exactly. And that's why I say it that way. I think its greatest sin is that it's one of the, it's just another copycat ripoff of Heat. And this movie truly, unfortunately for it, is truly a copycat ripoff of Heat. I mean,
yeah, 100%.
There's a lot of scene for scene stuff, even like the way the movie opens, where like the one like loose cannon guy in the crew shoots them during the robbery, Pablo Schreiber, who, you know, he's supposed to basically be the De Niro character, is like, "What'd you do? What the fuck happened?"
Yeah,
you know, it's like you guys are literally just taking scenes
just
from that movie.
Yeah, and even at the end, if Schreiber would have died on those like square containers, it would have been the exact ending of Heat, which would have. So just one sentence, sum up your thesis again, just to get everyone on board.
Yeah, my thesis in the one sentence is that Den of Thieves is yet another failed copycat attempt of Heat and fails to capitalize on everything that made Heat great.
There you go. Okay, so for me, mine is more so about the people in the film. And again, I like this movie. I like O'Shea Jackson. I will watch it again. But my thesis is that O'Shea Jackson is the greatest definition of being born into Hollywood and not even having really any talent. I know that's tough to like swallow, because I actually like him and I actually think he's a good actor.
Well, don't you think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the first part of your thesis I think is totally correct and you agree with, but you think he has no talent.
I just don't think that he should be where he is in his career based off of what he's done. He's done two other films, one of which he just played his dad.
Right.
The other one was Ingrid Goes West, which is apparently he's good in it. But then in this movie, he just plays like a scared, like, punk kid who then at the end does the absolute worst British accent I've ever heard in my entire life on film.
Am I supposed to be Irish? I'm not sure.
Yeah. He's getting paid millions of dollars Like, and if you're going to complain about Will Smith's kid, just go watch Pursuit of Happiness. Pursuit of Happiness, what Jaden Smith did when he was like 8 years old, is better than anything O'Shea Jackson's done his entire career.
The O'Shea Jackson accent moment at the end is quite, it's maybe my fist bump moment.
It's appalling. It's like, oh, yeah, I heard you work across the... Like, I can't even do it. It's so bad.
Or you told me yesterday, you were like, I'll bet this is how it played out. You were like, I'll bet he showed up to set. And they were like, okay, we're getting ready for the big thing. He's like, guys, I got
He's
this.
He's like, I got this accent. Don't worry about it. He's like, do you work at the Diamond Bar across the street?
He's like, good day, mate.
Yeah. Again, I like O'Shea. I don't think he's a bad actor. I just don't think that he has... He doesn't have the talent.
Do you think he doesn't have the requisite talent to be in the position that he's in? And it's frustrating to watch because as a movie fan and an actor yourself, you're just like, come on.
Well, especially more so just as a movie fan because, like, I'm supposed to believe that this kid who like, coordinated this whole thing can't even, like, fake an accent at the end. Like, it just bothered me.
Yeah,
and again, like, I love Straight Outta Compton. I think he does a great job in it. But he had a method acting position of, like, 20-something years of living with the person that he had to portray.
Right.
You know, so... I like O'Shea Jackson. I think he does a good job in this movie. I just don't think that his prerequisite talent has got deserved to get him in the position that he's in now.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I also, for the record, think that like the twist in this movie is probably the weakest part of the entire movie.
Oh, it's so obvious the whole time.
Which is a real shame because like it's kind of like, again, going back to the Heat comparison, it would be sort of like if you and I were like, all right, you know what? We should write I Want to Hold Your Hand. And you'd be like, that's been written. It's one of the most famous songs of all time. I'd be like, no, we should write I Want to Hold Your Hand. But we're going to add an extra verse and then have it change keys at the end.
Dude, this is like Love Actually.
Yeah.
I feel it in my fingers.
And you'd be like, wait, won't that just be like a kind of slightly worse and you're trying to be different just so you can show it's different than the thing you're ripping off version. And the worst part is everything you're changing. And I'd be like, no. It'll be innovative and great. No one will see it coming. That's exactly what this movie is.
It's exactly what this movie is. And again, they do a lot of the things well. Someone in here wrote, where is it? Yeah, okay. O'Shea Jackson has talent. I just don't think that he has enough talent to be
And
to
I know
where
you think
now.
He has talent. That's why I called you out on that. Because I think the first part of your statement is what you really believe. And I think it's frustrating to watch a movie where you're like, it's one of the leads in a movie that, for all intents, should have been better. It should have
been
better.
Anyone else that has done the work in Hollywood.
Yeah, and it would have been probably better.
Much better.
Yeah, but the problem is, and this is, you know, I was watching a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, the interviews about getting this movie made. This movie was in production for 13 years. So Christian Gudegast, who we'll talk about in a little bit, had a blind first look deal with New Line in 2003. So he had the script for this movie, the idea for this movie written almost 15 years ago. And this movie had to change companies. It almost died during the time. Butler was at one point almost going to give up on it. He had wanted to make this movie for so long that finally what happened was he was like the name started getting attached that they wanted to do this movie. So that's the interesting thing that as fans who are like basically analyzing the movies, neither of us has produced a movie and tried to get a script made.
Nope.
So it's like what ends up happening is, you know, Butler's like, I'm going to produce this. I want to star in this movie. The only way I can get that to happen is if people that are relevant want to do this movie. So it's not like he's like, I'm going to cast you. It's like O'Shea's guy is like, he wants to do this script. And it's like, okay, well, if he, you know, he has some brand name recognition now, Straight Outta Compton was a hit. That's how it gets made. And that's why it's like, we can wring our towels of frustration as much as we want, but it's like, it's just it's the beast.
It's the business. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So switching gears, moving on to something a little bit more fun.
Yeah. I'm having a great time.
I am too. We're going to talk fist pump moment.
Yes, fist pump moment is that moment you're watching the movie, something happens, and you're just like, yes, this is so sweet. I get to watch the rest of this movie right now. You want to call your buddy. This movie actually has a lot, and for two different reasons. It's got fist pump moments because there's awesome action. It also has fist pump moments because Gerard Butler's in it.
Yeah, Gerard Butler's in it just being Gerard Butler, and he's hilarious.
The good bad parts are totally great.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of fist pumps in this movie.
My fist pump for me was waiting for the third scene because in the first two with Gerard he was just eating and talking and I was laughing out loud in the theater. There was like eight of us in the theater everyone was like looking at me.
Four people in my theater.
I just couldn't stop laughing in those first two scenes, and then the third scene I was sitting there, I was waiting, I was like, all right, come on, please let him be eating, please let him be eating. But he ends up drinking, so I was like a little like bummed out.
Yeah.
But those first two scenes were excellent, so it was almost my fist pump. My true fist pump, though, is when Pablo Shriver says the thing. He's like, he like says something. I don't know if he says like brace yourselves or get down or whatever, and then the dudes know to duck.
Yeah,
and then he cocks the gun, hits the shoulder, and just unloads.
Yeah.
That gun, and you see, I love in movies when they show you the sheer power of a gun.
Yeah.
Like, For any of you that have shot a gun, you forget how strong they are when you watch a movie.
Yeah.
You shoot a gun one time, you're like, holy shit, I feel the power of how that could kill almost anything on the planet.
Yeah, right.
In your hand, you know? So in the movie, when he's got this mounted M60 with armor-piercing rounds,
yeah,
and everything stops, and then he shoots, and like, all the cars just blow up.
Yeah.
There's just bullets in every single one of them.
Yeah.
And then the dude gets hit in the throat.
Yeah.
And you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah,
these
right.
guys... I love in Heat where they're like, they're ready to go if shit hits the fan.
Yeah, right.
They know what they're going to do.
Yep.
In this one, they knew what they were going to do if shit hit the fan, but they did it to like the umpteenth degree.
Yeah, and they like, because they go, it's their rock and roll in the first scene, which is like, that's the, you know, that's again, that's the Heat knockoff. But I like that they save the big gun and that big moment for the highway at the
end. Yeah, yeah.
I agree. That was a super sweet fist pump moment. You know, I think my fist pump moment probably has to be, God, there's so many. But I think when Butler comes home, and again, we have another Heat ripoff scene where he the guy's with his wife, they're all having dinner, and he's just being such a cock.
He's such a dick in that
and
scene.
And he's got his... He doesn't hit anybody, though,
no.
Which is funny.
I know. I was like, I kept thinking something crazy
he's a level
was
guy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's got the divorce papers with him.
Yeah.
That scene was just like, it was just awesome because just Butler being Butler. And I think the other, I was going to use yours with the gun, but mm-hmm. you used it. And then my other one, I think, is when he eats the donut. He shows up and just like, there's a crime scene. He just like takes a donut that just like the cop was holding and died. It's like so inappropriate and disgusting on every level.
Yeah. And then the other guy even calls him out. Did you just eat a donut and throw trash my crime scene?
He's like, no.
I wouldn't do that.
So
I love that he, oh, also my other fist pump was when he got home. He's like, hey, babe.
Yeah.
I love hearing Gerard Butler say, babe.
I'm sorry, babe.
Like, he just can't say that word.
No.
It just doesn't sound right.
It's one of my favorites in the whole world. Yeah. Big fan of Butler. I was supposed to cover the premiere for this movie last week. I ended up not having to go to Dallas on Thursday, so I couldn't do it.
I ended up doing nothing instead because it was going to be better. No. Oh, really quickly, guys, I want to say this before we transition into star profiles. Jonas Tiger.
Yeah.
Started this idea on the Action Movie Anatomy fan page, and Richard has helped him organize it. There are the Action Movie, the Fan Awards, the Action Fan Awards, and there's a bunch of categories up there. Please go and vote for them. We're probably going to announce them next week on air, something like that. A lot of the winners have already been decided, but the polls are still up there. There's like Greatest Action Movie of the Year, Greatest Action Movie of All Time, Greatest Quote of the Year, things like that. So go online, go to the Action Movie Anatomy fan page, and vote for those. Moving on to star profiles.
Star profiles. This is going to be excellent. So
first we got O'Shea Jackson, whose three most recent hits are Straight Outta Compton and Anger Goes West. And he hasn't done anything else.
Yep.
I talked about him extensively in my thesis. I think he's a fine actor. I want to see him do more. I want to see him do more in his career. I hope to see him stick around because I think that he's got a good... I think he's got it.
I really think
he has like charisma, and I think he's got like this look about him. He's interesting.
He's like, I think he's miscast in this movie in the end.
Yeah.
The thing at the end especially is the part that makes him feel miscast to me. It just doesn't feel super like believable, I guess. But I guess that's probably why he's good for the roles, because he looked kind of unassuming. So he's supposed to look like kind of a kid, and
yeah.
That's why I like him being a genius, because he's like, I'm totally in control of my environment at all times, or whatever.
But all the pictures of all the people.
Yeah.
You seen Usual Suspects?
Yeah. But I think he's definitely got talent, and I believe he'll continue to stick around. I also think that his first three projects, it's a solid three projects.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Yeah, like I kind of like the projects that he picked. Like, I'm glad that... I guess what I'm happy about is that it's not like he did Straight Outta Compton and then his next movie was like Fast and the Furious 8 and he just was like in it and it was like, oh, he's super famous now.
Right.
You know what I mean? He still feels like he's kind of... Inger Goes West was an indie and like, you know, indie people liked it.
Yeah. This, it was indie though with like the people that were in it were kind of on top of the world at the time though.
Inger Goes West is Aubrey Plaza, right?
Yeah.
Who else?
I mean, mainly her, but
yeah,
she's
yeah.
like, you know what I mean? Like, being in there and her being in there, they're literally the peak of both their careers in that moment.
Yeah. And then I guess this movie, you know, it obviously doesn't execute on the levels that we hoped it would, but, like, it is, of course, it's at least the more interesting attempt to tell this story. It's not just an actual remake of Heat.
Yeah, they try to mesh a few movies together.
Yeah, you know? So I think that's interesting. But what this movie does do at the end is it throws him into this twist conversation where he has this, like, you're like, oh, wow.
Right.
The twist happens. And twist. Yeah. And so what we started talking about was, like, that was a totally failed attempt at a twist. Like, but what? Yeah.
I wish that was a feather in his hair.
He just makes you so angry. Just like, no, see no,
I like him. I do. I really do like him.
But what are some of our favorite twists? You and I like talked a little bit about some of the best twists we've ever seen in movies. Big ones, big turns at the end.
Oh, yeah. Elizabeth Olsen. It's another great example of someone who, like, put in the work and put in the time and, like, has done different movies and isn't... Anyway. Yeah, so, like, this twist at the end is fine. It doesn't blow my mind, but there are some twists out there that do. And if we're going to talk about those, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Well, I think we're going to do a shared list, and I think you have a lot of the best ones written down, but I will jump in with what is maybe my all-time favorite twist, and that's Fight Club. And that's just... it. You know, Fight Club to me is one of the movies that, as the years pass... And as more time passes and we get closer and closer to 20 years since that movie came out, it's like it's just better and better every year. The hype like seems to have – the hype has kind of finally died on the movie to the point that it's now considered to be like – it's an old enough movie that you've only seen Fight Club if you're like a young fan who goes back to appreciate older movies or you were around when it came out. But it's not anymore like – oh, yeah, well, Fight Club's, like, one of my favorite movies because, you know, everyone saw it 5 years ago.
Right.
We were that age, but now we're going to be 30, and that movie came out when we were, like, 10.
And it's still so good.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's... I always wonder if when I go back it's not going to be, and it just is fantastic.
Yeah, I watched it pretty recently, and, like, God, the twist at the end is a great twist, and you don't see it coming.
No.
You really don't see it coming.
No, you don't. Some of the other ones that we talked about are, like, I mean, M. Night's the classic...
Sixth Sense.
Twist master. Sixth Sense, the I see dead people, and then Bruce Willis realizing that he's dead at the end is one of the craziest ever.
That honestly might be the best twist of all time.
It's pretty good.
Best the other picture one, nominated that movie.
Yeah, the other one that's in huge contention for the greatest twist of all time is Kaiser Soze.
Yeah,
Usual Verbal Suspects. Kent. Yeah, and Usual Suspects. It's one of those where you're just like...
Right.
And like, it sucks because it was back when Spacey was a god, but it was like, that was one of those moments when you were like, that is why Spacey is one of the greatest ever. He is so good at the moment of him walking away from the jail
and losing
and, like,
the limp.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Scary Movie 1. Scary Movie. Scream. So those are probably those are probably my favorites. Split was actually pretty good.
It has a good twist.
It just came out. It was a good twist at the end. I like that.
Yeah, what are some of the other ones? Yeah, Split. Because the Unbreakable twist also you don't see coming. M. Night's just great.
M. Night is actually really good at that. It's a shame that he kind of... I mean, even The Village, like, when they find out...
Never saw that movie.
It's just that... I mean, the twist is that it's water. It's like, it's a little weaker than the other ones, but...
Isn't The Village, like, that they... It's like they're in... It's, like, modern day, right? And it's like a... What
Which
is
one?
It?
Wait, what are
the,
you saying?
The Village, isn't it like that?
It's that they're actually in modern day.
Yeah,
and they're
right.
Like in this village in like the forest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Because they don't want anyone to go outside. Some of the other ones that our fans are talking about, Shutter Island is a great one.
Yeah,
that's fine. Memento is one of my favorites.
Great twist. Yeah,
Seven is excellent.
Seven's got a great twist.
I mean, the no. I am
your
father.
That's
probably the greatest
twist
of all time.
Yeah, that's a really good twist.
So,
The Crying Game.
Yeah.
Go watch that one.
Should I? So those are some of our favorite twists of all time. It's not that this one wasn't good. It's just that those are... If you want to see a real twist, go watch any of the movies we just listed. Those will blow your mind.
So next up, we've got Gerard Butler, my boy Jerry. We've got his last three films, A Family Man, Geostorm, and A Hunter Killer. So there's a lot of fun stuff going on here. The first
Hunter Killer is just an extension of Bounty Hunter, right? With him and Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I don't think it is.
The Ugly Truth. Law-abiding citizen. Gamer.
Oh, God, there's so many.
Here's what's fascinating about Gerard Butler. So we're going to do a thing in just a second where Andrew and I are both going to pitch our best Gerard Butler kids movie in 30 seconds. We might even give ourselves 60 seconds just to be safe. I'm excited for this part. But before we do that, I do want to talk about the fact. So Gerard Butler's career starts in like the early 2000s. I read about him a lot this week. So he was an alcoholic when he was younger. He in his 20s, he said he drank himself onto the floor constantly. He got fired from jobs, blew a law career that he had. He went to school for it and changed careers in his late 20s, like 27. Girlfriend who was a casting
director.
Still got a chance. And started doing theater at 27 and started booking his movie roles like around 30. That's like when he first got his like first stuff. So he really didn't start until he was about 30.
Yeah.
And he quit drinking, went to rehab. I think he drank into his 30s. I don't think he was sober yet. He is totally sober now.
Yeah.
And this is what I think is crazy about Gerard Butler. So we all remember Gerard Butler breaking out for the same movie, 300. That's like he had done The Phantom of the Opera and he had been in some other movies prior to that. But like really, 300
was a phenomenon when it came out.
And he's super jacked and it's like everything that you would want out of an action star. He's just doing it in that movie. And like
everyone in the world wanted to get that same body. That 300 diet was the biggest thing in the world at the time.
It's a really big deal. So Gerard Butler gets super famous in 06. And by 2008, 2009, he's like legitimately A-list. He's making real movies that people care about. But here's what's crazy to me is when I went back to look at the movies that in my memory, I was like, oh yeah, Gerard Butler, he made all these movies. You know, he made Gamer and he made Law Abiding Citizen and all these, you know, Olympus Has Fallen. Most of that stuff happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
He's like kind of in the exact same position in his career that he was in when he was making like kind of subpar action movies a decade ago. He's just making the same movies. Weird. I like was like, wow, how did 10 years pass so fast? He's kind of managed to not go up or down in 10 years.
Was Law Abiding Citizen 2009?
Yeah. Like, he's kind of managed to stay totally consistent for 10 years and just keep making these movies where, like, the world's totally willing to accept Gerard Butler as an A-lister. They're willing to go see his movies and pay to support his career.
And put him at the helm of movies that are just going to make money and be forgotten.
Yeah. And so we had a conversation before the cameras went live here about, is Gerard Butler an A-lister? And I was saying, I think he's maybe, but probably not. And you were saying that you think that the recognizability of somebody worldwide is what really should determine it. Like,
yeah, it's so tough, man, because it's like, what determines an A-lister anymore? Like, we don't have a true movie star like we used to when we talk about it. So what determines A-listability?
And like, you know, how many people kind of get, how many people get to be in that conversation at one time? Because like, okay, so the question was Nick Cage, right?
And right,
like, I was like, there's no way Nick Cage is not an A-lister anymore. And you were like, well, if that guy goes into a bar anywhere in the world,
everyone loses their shit. It's Nick Cage,
right?
You know, and like, if Nick Cage signs on to your movie, imagine you're a new writer, new producer, new director, and Nick Cage is going to be your lead, and you know that you can direct Nick Cage.
Yeah,
you've seen Leaving Las Vegas and you have a great script.
Yeah,
if you get Nick Cage, that's huge
deal. So the comparison is like, so Gerard Butler, Nick Cage. What about people who are like having their moment right now? You mentioned Chadwick Boseman, you know, Black Panther.
Right. And I even went to the extreme of Gal Gadot, who's like someone who, look, Wonder Woman, I love it. And I think she's phenomenal. And she is an A-lister by any means.
Yeah.
But let's say 3 years from now, the next Wonder Woman comes out. DC, it's not good. The DC universe falls apart. And she's just kind of
5-6 years from now,
she's just another Angelina Jolie in a sense of where you're like, is Angelina Jolie an A-lister anymore?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I tweeted this out just before the show just to see what people thought, right? And the question I asked was, what determines it? A-list, B-list? And I used the two questions I asked were Cage and Butler. So I asked, is Cage A-list, B or below? Is Butler A-list, B or below? We had 27% of people say Cage is an A-lister.
Mm-hmm.
We had 35% say Cage is B or below. We had 4% of people say Butler is an A-lister. And we had 34% people said that Butler was B or below.
Right.
That's crazy.
And that's a totally understandable, I guess, rating or like chart or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Statistics. But it makes sense.
Statistics, because, you idiots. Statistics, you morons.
Because Gerard Butler doesn't make good movies. But Gerard Butler could still be in any movie in the world and you wouldn't be surprised.
Right, if he was one of the two big leads. Yeah,
if he like, was the, yeah, on anything. You know, like if Gerard Butler is the next villain in the next biggest Marvel movie.
Right, totally.
I would believe it in a heartbeat. And no one would be like, how the fuck did he get there?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Totally agree. So I think that's pretty interesting. But you do look at the crop of movies that he comes out with. And you know what I think has actually kept Gerard Butler working? And this is interesting. When I was talking to Dean Devlin, who directed Geostorm, and he's the producer on Independence Day with Roland Emmerich, I was asking about Gerard Butler a little bit and just like, you know, how do you feel about working with this guy? Like, what is it that makes him? And he was just like, he's the guy. Like, he described him basically as Cruise. He's
right.
Like, he's the guy that comes to set. He's full of energy all the time, always smiling. He's like The Rock, like so positive, remembers everyone's name, shakes everyone's hand. He's that guy. And that keeps you working.
Of course it does.
That's like, that's the guys that it's like, if you can conduct your business that way and you can, which I have to think his sobriety, like he found something that he stays away from that shit now. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what keeps him that way. But like, that's what's kept this guy working, because he doesn't really make good movies. He's kind of just like, he makes big, dumb action movies. Like,
yeah.
In the way Schwarzenegger did in the 80s. These just bad movies that people like to watch.
Right. But would you consider Schwarzenegger an A-lister still?
Yeah, because he's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Exactly.
But he was the governor. I mean,
well, that's not why. He's the Terminator.
He's
that's
Schwarzenegger.
Why. All right, so interesting discussion. I don't know what you guys think, whether these guys are A-list or not anymore. What determines what is an A-lister? A lot of people were talking about Alicia Vikander.
Yeah.
In the chat.
Is she an A-lister? Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, we'll see how Tomb Raider
goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's another one because she won an Oscar. So before we move on to the next part, we do know we're about to pitch our best Gerard Butler kids movie. We're going to give it 60 seconds or less. I'll keep a timer here for us. And do you want to go first or should I?
I'll go first because you're very proud of yours.
I'm excited.
All right. Okay. My movie is called
2 Go.
Olympus Has Homework. Mike Banning is sent. Mike Banning is put under WITSEC protection and he's relocated to the middle of the country. He's the crazy old security guard at a kid's high school.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's awesome.
This is awesome.
Trevor, the computer science whiz of the school, finds old videos of Mike Banning saving the president online and he posts a tweet online that sends Mike Banning's life into a spiral. Everyone is coming to kill him, from the Koreans to the weird Asians in the second one to the weird brown people in the first one. They're all coming back to kill Mike Banning at this high school.
Wow.
So Mike Banning and this group of kids have to protect themselves in a Home Alone style showdown at the end.
Wow.
Via Equalizer.
Oh, great.
And Home Alone.
Yeah.
And of course, Mike Banning's going to triumph.
Don't forget the villains in Angel Has Fallen, the upcoming third installment. So anyway, guys, you did it in 56 seconds. I'm impressed.
First of all, Olympus Has Homework might be the best thing ever.
Ever. Incredible. I'm like very impressed. Or like something about Banning, like gym teacher Banning or something.
I was trying so hard to think of something else.
That's great. I don't have a name for mine, but I have a great plot.
okay,
all right.
Let's go.
So are you ready for this?
Olympus Has Homework.
Okay. So, for my Gerard Butler kids movie in 60 seconds or less, here's what I got. So, Gerard Butler was a former tight end champion in college, okay? He has lost it. He's now in his 40s. He's a drunk. This is going to be kind of like Bad Santa, but not R-rated, okay? He's got a wife who gets in a car crash, goes into a coma, okay? Now, her estranged stepdaughter comes to be at her bedside, which you find out, Banning, drunk Banning, is like, wow, you're training to be a figure skater? And you can't, you were training, but you can't leave your mom's side, you refuse to leave, and you have a competition in 6 months, and it was her dream to see you win? Looks like I'm gonna have to train you. Even though I'm only a former tight end who's a total drunk, we're gonna figure this one out together.
Because he can do anything.
Because he can do anything. So he trains her to be a figure skater, and he's drunk the whole time, but it's funny, and it's heartwarming, and then she comes out of the coma, and Banning kicks drinking at the end of it, because that's what happens when she wakes up, and he sees the light. There's your movie.
And they all watch the figure skating thing at the end together.
At the end together,
he drinks water.
I was so excited just now that my shirt popped open while I was talking. My heart was beating so fast. Yeah.
I want to watch both those movies, man.
It's great, right?
I think they're fantastic.
She's at the bedside, and she's like, I won't leave my mom's side and go home and train. And she's like, but it was her dream. And then Banning finds like the book, and he's reading it. And he's like, well, we'll make this work. And there's like montage training scenes, and Banning's just like drinking wild turkey. He's just like not even, he won't kick drinking, but he's going to help her train.
He's training to be a figure skater, but he's drunk all the time. It'll be funny.
But also he's her manager. So like when they go to like the competition, right?
Yeah.
He's like,
he's aggressive.
He's like Nick Nolte is for Brendan when they go to the thing, right?
In her corner? Do they have corners in ice rink?
I don't
think so.
But he's like outrageous and he's lewd.
Imagine the montage scenes with him and her.
Oh, God. Good, right?
So good.
I didn't cast my movie, but I was excited about it.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah. Olympus Has Homework is pretty stellar. Pretty stellar.
All right, guys. So moving into production development, my favorite thing that you pulled here is that Gerard Butler gained 25 pounds for this role, as recommended by Christian Gudegast.
Pure muscle.
Definitely not. Gerard Butler has got to be like in his early 50s, right?
Or like 49? 48, something like that. I mean, if you figure he was... I think he was like in his early 30s or around the time that he got into Hollywood. So like probably he's like 46 now, something like that.
To gain and lose 25 pounds when you're in your late 40s for this type of movie is like, I'd be like, God damn it. Are you sure, babe?
Are you sure, Christian?
Gerard, stop calling me babe.
I call everyone babe. I don't know anyone's name. I just call everyone babe.
He's so charming on set. He calls everyone babe.
No one
cares.
He's
so charming with the women. So that, for me, I was just like, damn. Yeah. And as an actor, you just have to say yes. But that was very impressive to me.
Yeah, well,
and pretty
look,
irrelevant.
As we said, this movie was a shade away from being, you know, actually a good movie people were going to talk about. So, so this movie was in development for 14 years. We talked about Christian Gudegast as he had that blind look deal with New Line. The other big stuff here is that Gudegast basically he graduated from UCLA Film School. His thesis film Shadowbox won the award for best student film that same year. Sold his first script, Black Ocean, to Oliver Stone in 93. Don't know what happened to that. And he's done rewrites on various scripts. He wrote A Man Apart, the Vin Diesel movie, and then he also wrote London Has Fallen. So he's kind of been in this world, but this is his feature film directorial debut.
Yeah.
So Gudegast, you know, that's his... He's a producer on this film, and he really hadn't produced anything. So he's kind of just getting his shot here.
Yeah, and it's super cool because, I mean, obviously Butler probably did... I mean, as you have here, it's his Butler's produced half of all of his own films since 2009.
Right.
And for this, it was probably another one of those things. I don't know why he picked Gudegast.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just because they'd worked together.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he wrote the script for London, so I'm sure he had gotten some time around him. And
George's like, "Well, I know you can write well.
I know you can write well. That must mean you'll direct this film, babe." But Gudegast had worked as a music video director, as we find out that a lot of these action directors end up. Now, talking about the producers on this film, it's an interesting group. You've got Butler and Gudegast, and you have three guys, Mark Canton, Ryan Kavanaugh, and Tucker Tooley. Canton knows Gerard from having worked on 300 with him. He produced 300 and then quite a few of Gerard's movies. All three of these guys have quite a few awesome credits. Like, none of them are slouches. They've all, you know, one guy did produce The Fighter, you know, another guy, like, there's some kind of bigger dramatic films, some big budget action stuff. Two of these guys, though, the final two, Ryan Kavanaugh was the founder of Relativity, and then Tucker Tooley was the president of Relativity Media.
So that name sounds so familiar, Ryan Kavanaugh.
Yeah, so Relativity obviously was a big part behind this. That's kind of the deal with these guys. There are three guys who all have a pretty good amount of success. None of them are, like, irrelevant. They've all done big stuff, financed big movies.
Yeah, I mean, other than this movie taking 15 years to be made, it is kind of just like the cookie-cutter outline of making a Hollywood blockbuster that isn't going to be massive or isn't going to be like a huge success. It's just like taking a bunch of people that have got pretty good resumes, a pretty good actor, a decent director, and just like trying it out. And as you saw with its return, I don't know if it's going to get released internationally. This movie was produced by STX Entertainment. It cost $30 million to make, which is like shocking, kind of. It's like very low.
We should have had Brandt come on. STX is his company.
Yeah, we should have.
Yeah, that would have been smart.
Good. Brandt Pinvidic. He came on for...
John Wick 2.
John Wick 2.
Yeah.
John Wick. $30 million to make it. Opened January 19th of 2018. It grossed $28 million domestic, and I don't know if it's open worldwide.
It hasn't opened worldwide yet, because, like, I know Jarvie hasn't seen it. It opens next
week. Oh, yeah, yeah, right, in Estonia. And so, yeah, there are a handful of our fans that aren't going to be able to see this episode when we're doing it live, because they haven't seen the movie yet. So for a total gross of where it's been released in the U.S. and a couple other countries, it's got $31.5 million. So it's already made its money back.
Honestly, $30 million is pretty impressive.
That's what I was saying. It's so cheap. I don't understand how it was made. I almost feel like it was mismarketed, but just someone just wrote the wrong information online. But the more I think about it, no one in there took big paychecks.
No, I'm sure Butler, Jerry got paid like $5 million.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry probably didn't even take too much because he's producing it.
Yeah,
right.
He turned most of his money in the back end. He really wanted to get the movie made.
Right, and then you think about the production and all that. There weren't tons of big explosions, and the one big explosion you don't see.
Yep.
And, you know, there's the huge two big shootouts, so it makes sense. Opening weekend, it was number three at $15.2 million behind Jumanji in week five, which is still making around $20 million a week. And then you got 12 Strong ahead of it just by $700,000.
Yep.
Did anyone see that?
I haven't seen it. Some of our fans saw it, though. They liked it. Yeah, I'll probably see it at some point. I heard it was decent.
So this is where it gets interesting. So IMDb gave this movie a 7.3,
right,
which is whatever. It seems fine. And then you go to Rotten Tomatoes, and Rotten Tomato crucifies it. They give it a 40 from all critics, a 59 from top, and then... 7.3, which is direct core.
Yeah, I mean, this. I think the 73% is the most interesting part. And truthfully, guys, if you're fans of the show and you kind of know how we do things, that's the biggest reason we decided to talk about the film. Generally speaking, if a movie has that high of an audience score but like a pretty poor critic score, it usually means that it's what worth us talking about, because like we'll probably enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime that we see something with a high audience score, like a strongly juxtaposing audience score, there's something very interesting about that movie.
And I totally get that. You know, this doesn't surprise me too much. because it, you know, it has entertaining parts. Like I said, if this movie's on cable, I'll probably watch it again.
Like, if this movie's like 25-30 minutes shorter and it's just tightened up a little bit, maybe some good old Tony Gilroy writing in there,
it
could have been phenomenal.
Yeah,
or even Michael Mann writing.
Yeah, some of the casting choices in this movie, it's like
that one dude, that like pug nose guy.
Yeah,
I don't like him.
Oh, you didn't like him?
He's fine.
He's the guy who shoots in the first scene.
Yeah, and I've seen him in something else. He's pretty good.
I recognize him too. Yeah,
it's not that I don't like him. I just wanted him to be more. He seemed like the most interesting one in the gang.
Most of the crew was like not. I mean, look, there's even his name in the movie's Bosco. There's a character named Bosco in Heat.
Yeah,
like
is it played by Sizemore? No,
Bosco is, I think Bosco's Ted Levine. I think it is.
God, that's, the fact that Ted Levine and the two guys that look like the exact same are in that movie.
The guy that plays Wayngro?
Yeah. Wayngro.
All right, we're going to get into the next bit of the show, but before we do, we're going to talk about our top five heist movies each.
Yeah, okay.
So this is a good one. There's a lot of good heist movies. Yeah, if you look up top heist movies online, just to see, kind of get like a memory refresh, there's like 50 or 60 that are really sweet.
They're so good.
Yeah, it's a good genre. There's a lot of them.
So I don't know if I have an order for mine, so I'm just going to go through and talk them.
You're just going to talk about them?
Talk about them. The first one I have written down is The Score.
Yeah.
De Niro and Norton.
I love The Score.
So good. I love it. I love Edward Norton's ability to play Denny in that movie, or Danny.
Right.
He
goes full soloist for the role.
He goes full soloist for the role, but he crushes it. He's so good at it. And he's so convincing, and then the De Niro getting away at the end with giving him the wrong scepter and
all
that.
That's got a good twist.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
The Score's kind of underappreciated. I feel like that movie's pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like The Italian Job is almost like the poor man's The Score, but The Italian Job's also really good.
Yeah, I've never seen The Italian Job.
Really?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, it's a good one.
All right, my number one I'm going to go with is going to be Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love Reservoir Dogs. It's so good. This is, to this day, it is still my favorite Tarantino movie.
Really?
I mean, his movies kind of, over the years, they get like a little worse and worse, I think, and you get older and you get a little, kind of burned out, like turned off by kind of some of the gimmicky filmmaking.
Yeah, I get that.
But, obviously he's got a lot of really memorable scenes. Pulp Fiction's by far his most famous, but I do just love Reservoir Dogs, man. It's just so raw. It's got, like, the soundtrack and the way it's told.
The cast. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's just great. That movie's really good, and it's not really about the heist as much as it's about the aftermath of the heist.
Yeah.
But, it goes back and it sets it up, and, I love that movie.
I think for me next, I'm going to go Fast Five.
Yeah, it's
like a good
one.
Like, the revival of the franchise, and you got Gal driving that garbage truck at the end looking excellent.
She's got the hat on.
Yeah.
She looks great.
Just the twist and, like, the switching of things and everything that kind of goes on in that movie. It was refreshingly intelligent.
Yeah.
And it like brought life back to a franchise that no one wanted anything to do with.
Yep.
And I just remember watching that. I think you and I watched it together, and I was kind of just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Fast Five's sweet.
Yeah.
Fast Five's the best one. I'm going to go next with Out of Sight. This is one of.
Oh,
I love Out of Sight.
Soderbergh.
Soderbergh and Clooney. This is like maybe the best. It's maybe like the best Jennifer Lopez has ever been in a movie, in my opinion. I know people love her in Selena, which I haven't seen in a very long time.
I like her in Enough.
Enough. She's actually had a pretty good career as an actress, but this is early Clooney. This is young Clooney. It's like 96, I think, is when this movie came out. And this is Soderbergh before he makes any of his big hits. And, this is before Traffic, before Aaron Brockovich, Ocean's 11, any of those movies.
Right.
He's definitely making his transition from kind of art house cinema into mainstream, and this movie I think is pretty much the transition point. So I love this movie. I think it's so much fun. Ving Rhames is in this movie. He's great.
My boy.
Steve Zahn's in this movie. If you haven't seen it before, this movie is excellent.
I need to watch Out of Sight again. I don't remember it well at all.
Don Cheadle. It's a sweet cast.
Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
So for me, it was one that I was almost not going to put on the list, and then we talked about it right before the show, is Inception. It's one of the...
Also on my list.
Yeah, it's one of the great heist movies. They're stealing your mind, okay? Like, that's a pretty damn hard thing to steal.
Yep.
And it's told brilliantly. The non-linear storytelling, it's one of the greatest movies ever. So the fact that it has a heist in it makes it even better. So we'll skip that. And my next one... it's so tough. I think I'm going to go Inside Man.
You like Inside Man?
I like Inside Man. I was watching it again the other day, and... Denzel, he's
like
so
Spike
good.
Lee. It might be Spike Lee's most successful financial
and,
film. Actually.
Him and Chiwetel Ejiofor, I think, is the other cop.
I don't remember.
I think it's the other cop. Marissa, do you know for sure?
An Inside Man? I just
I will look it up.
I think it's him. And then And then what's his name? The guy, the lead guy. Why can't I think of his
name? Clive
Owen? Yeah, Clive Owen. Just like the whole thing of hiding in the wall for a week afterwards and the idea of that and interviewing everyone and all the bank robbers getting interviewed. And it was just cool.
Smoldering Clive Owen.
It was smoldering. It was
shit talk.
Okay. Yeah, and also, it kind of reminded... Bandits is another good one.
Oh, yeah.
It's an honorable
mention. I like Bandits. Yeah, it's a fun one. Next up for me, I'm going to go with... Point Break.
I was wondering when it was going to show up.
Yeah, Point Break, my favorite movie of all time. God, that movie's sweet.
Hey, Cha, give me two.
We should do that movie on the show.
Yeah, we should do that. Oh, wait, we have.
We should do it again.
We should do the new one on the show.
Yeah, no.
yeah, never.
This Point Break's great. Look, Point Break is awesome. It's so funny because, like, Point Break and Heat, which I'm not going to put on this list because it's the OG. It
feels a little redundant.
They're the same principle in a lot of ways, and mm-hmm. it's also the same principle as Fast and the Furious. It's a story that's been told over and over and over again. It's the warring lead, you know, the detective and the criminal, but it's the likable criminal, and he's kind of an anti-hero, and they have respect for each other. That's kind of it's the old story. We've seen it so many times. Point Break is really, really silly, but it also has really good action, and it's Swayze, who, you know, as you guys know, is my all-time favorite, R.I.P., in his greatest performance. I think it's his best moment that he's ever had on screen. He's just, like, super magnetic.
Yeah, him as Bodhi is his greatest role, I think.
And he's great. And, like, his relationship with Keanu, like, this movie's just super, super sweet. And, of course, it's by one of the all-time great directors in Catherine Bigelow in an early turn, so you can see a lot of the things that make her great in this movie. Anthony Kiedis blows his foot off also.
I'm so curious what your number one is, then, or what your next one is. I mean, I know they're not in order, but, like, I'm still... Anyway, so other honorable mentions that we didn't throw in there yet, unless Oceans is your last one.
Oceans is my
number Oceans one. Is your yeah. number one. Okay, yeah. I was wondering why you didn't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured it had to be.
Did you already say your five?
No, I didn't. Mine is Thomas Crown Affair.
You love Thomas Crown Affair.
I love the Thomas Crown Affair. First of all, the sex scene between Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo is quite gratuitous.
It's graphic.
It is very graphic. But the twist at the end, the all the paintings and everyone in the bowler caps and the briefcases, like, watching that as a kid, I was blown away.
Is that Martin Campbell also?
I think so. It might be. I think it is. It was just executed so brilliantly, and Marissa, I know you really liked that movie. The music and everything, it was like watching a dance.
Brosnan is excellent. He's really, really, really good in that movie.
Yeah, so that for me is probably my favorite. So I'll mention these other ones since I just ruined your number one. Baby Driver, the Die Hard franchise, Die Hard 1, Die Hard 3. What are some other ones people mentioned in here? Dog Day Afternoon is another one I saw on there. So... Your number one is Oceans. Is it just Oceans 11?
Oceans 11. One? Yeah, yeah. So he didn't direct Thomas Crown Affair. So who directed Crown Affair? It's directed by somebody.
Someone we know.
I think it's McTiernan. Is that who it is? I think it's McTiernan. I'm going to confirm that right now. It's nope. Let's not do that.
So for Oceans, I'll confirm it. Why don't you talk about Oceans?
Oceans 11, man. It's just God. Like, you know, you
it's
think
McTiernan.
About what
it is McTiernan? Thank you, Marissa.
Yeah, thank you, Marissa. You think about those movies that when you watched them growing up, they just like they felt like the coolest thing you'd ever seen.
Yeah. And that's how I felt watching Thomas Crown.
And you get a little older, and there are so many things that could go wrong in terms of the legacy of a movie to like really age it out of being great.
Right.
And none of those things go wrong with that movie. If you think about it, it's like
I have to go watch it again.
Soderbergh went on to have a really successful, like legitimate, validated career. You know, he turned out to be every bit the filmmaker we thought he was. Like George Clooney turned out to be every bit the movie star he appeared to be. Brad Pitt, Matt Damon. The cast at the time didn't... It's not like the cast faded out. They all just got way more famous as the world went on.
Yeah, it was like the biggest men in the world all in the same room and them all outperforming each other and then going on to do better things.
And like the entire supporting cast, super, super entertaining. Like the recruitment scenes with, you know, Scott Conn and Casey Affleck and you have like Bernie Mac and you like... yeah. It's just... the movie is just really good. It's like funny and it's fun.
First one came out when?
2001, I believe.
Yeah, and it came out at the perfect time.
Julia
That's
Roberts.
Exactly what we wanted.
It was like just peak Julia. Yeah. Like
Garcia.
Yeah, Andy Garcia. Like the movie's great. The setup is awesome. The music is sexy.
It's just like a sexy movie. It's a fun. Yeah.
I read a thing on Complex talking about the best heist movies of all time. Getting ready for this, and the guy says that the best thing about Ocean's 11 is that it makes you feel while you're watching it the way you're supposed to feel while you're planning for a heist, which is that after this one job, you'll never have to work again. And I was like, that's a good point. It just feels so cool. You just feel like Yeah, that movie's great. Unfortunately, 12 and 13 are not great.
Yeah, I saw 12 and it was fine. I never saw 13.
Yeah, they're okay. But 11 is really great. I'm happy that it's aged as well as it has. That's probably a movie we'll do on here, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we'll probably do that one day.
Ocean's 8 comes out this summer. It comes out like in June, I think.
Maybe we'll do it then.
So maybe we'll do Ocean's 11 the month before.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be our top 5 heist movies each.
Yeah, and so moving on to our AMA question, we've got... first of all, big thanks to Sam Malara for joining the Patreon and contributing to the show.
Yeah,
and the team
thanks,
action.
Sam. We want to give you a big shout out to welcome you to the Action Army officially. Happy to have your support on the Patreon. Check out our team action stuff you'll see up there today.
And he asked, will Gerard Butler ever reach the height of 300 ever again? It's starting to seem like he may never get there.
Well, what's really interesting about that is my statement earlier about his career was kind of inspired by your question. Because as I looked at that to see how long has it been since 300, that was when I started to notice the run that he's had. He'll never reach the height of 300 again, and strictly because at the time that he was in 300, he was like an early 30s shredded sex icon who was like this new guy that nobody really knew who he was yet.
And 300 was one of the biggest movies ever to happen, ever. Like, when that movie came out, it was huge.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zack Snyder. I mean, there's a lot of things that worked. Could Gerard Butler reach a different height, like a different kind of height? Yes, he definitely could. I could see, you know, him having a little bit more of like a Jackman persona where he's one of those like super well-loved people.
Right, but don't you think Jackman's talent like far eclipses that of Butler's?
Well,
and like Jackman hasn't even he hasn't even gotten, you know what I mean? We just talked about him on our Patreon and the Oscars and him getting snubbed all the time.
Yeah.
So you talk about Gerard reaching another height, it's like, well, maybe he'll be in a great movie one day, but like I want Jackman to win an Oscar still,
for sure.
I think that he could.
So I don't think that he could reach the same career like point as Jackman. But I think that sort of feeling of if he's in something, I'll see it because I love him.
Yes,
which is kind of where Butler is and where he's going. And he could cash in that goodwill a few times over the next 5 years. And if he works with one really good director, like if one really good director puts Butler in a great villain role or something, then it could all turn around. He could be, and you said, he could be in a Marvel movie, in a DC movie.
Denis Villeneuve could make him a villain in something.
Sweet. He's super sweet. So I think that's the answer to the question. We've got one last bit on the show, and that is going to be favorite line. I'm going to throw mine out. It's when Banning goes to see his... his wife's like, you're cheating on me. You were so drunk. You texted the wrong person, you idiot. And he's like, oh, babe.
Oh, babe.
And she's leaving with the kids. And as she's walking out, she's like, drops the line where she's like, I'll go find a man who's cock and get hard for me.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, you're like, this guy's a drunk.
This guy's bad.
You're like, he's just, you know, texted the wrong woman. Can't even get it up for his hot wife.
Smells like a hooker.
God, he's just losing
terrible.
It. Terrible dude. He's like, but he's good at his job.
I actually didn't write mine down because I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
But it was basically everything he said in the first two scenes.
Yeah.
Because his mouth was full the whole time.
You're just this big bad cop, aren't you, Nick? And he's like,
yeah, it was so. I was kind of intimidated when the regulators or whatever had O'Shea Jackson in the hotel room and he's like, you're not the bad guys, we are.
In like the dirty orgy interrogation. Yeah, like, what is happening?
Yeah, I was like, there's only one bedroom and he's in it. What are you guys doing out in the living room? Yeah, it was really gross.
Yeah.
I've been in some shady situations, man. Never been in one like that. All right, guys.
I guess you know what? My other favorite is when 50 Cent's daughter's prom date comes over.
Oh, that's a great scene.
And he's like, let me holler at you for a second. Yeah. And he like cakes in the garage and all the dudes are standing there. And he's like, he's like, for 16 years, I've taken care of my daughter. And he's like, now, it's like, I got to put her responsibility in your hands.
Yeah.
He's like... You need to respect that. I was like, oh, yeah. This scene is like, oh, man.
Like, you knew that there was going to be some ridiculous, like, dad showing, like, bad boys moment. Like, they always have that.
Yeah, right.
But, like, the fact that there was, like, 20 dudes in that garage.
Yeah.
It was pretty horrifying.
Oh, yeah.
It was very funny.
He's like, guys, I need y'all to stay in my garage while I holler at my girl's boy.
Be like, 2 hours, 3 hours. I hope he's on time. I don't know. I got drinks in the fridge.
And then he says, so I'll see you at 11:30.
Yes, 11:30. Like, yeah,
no,
sir,
sex 11. At midnight on prom night. Nope. Not happening. Nope. You get her home.
Yeah, 11:30. Yes, sir. 11:30 sounds good.
It was pretty great. So anyway, guys, that pretty much wraps up the show. There are three categories in the action movie canon. Those categories are totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. It's our favorite category. It's the middle. It's like Point Break, Predator, you know, kind of held together by one really dramatic principle with some kind of absurd things that make you laugh a little bit. Totally ridiculous. It's like Face Off, Con Air, Demolition Man.
Yep.
Yeah, really silly, but still awesome. And then totally legit are movies, you know, like Lone Survivor, The Fugitive, Gladiator, just like really solid and consistent. They don't really make you laugh at all. This movie tries to take itself deadly serious.
Yeah, it's got the Fuqua effect.
Yeah, so it doesn't have any sense of humor about itself pretty much at all. And it does make me laugh in quite a few moments, but it has some good action. So yeah. I'll give it the middle category.
I will take everything you said and just piggyback on it, and I will put it in the middle category. It's almost totally ridiculous, but it does enough to where it's not.
Almost. So yeah. That's gonna be the answer. Only one last thing left to do on the show, and that's gonna be called the pitch. What's up, everybody?
I've gotten so good at that.
You good?
Yeah.
You've got a lot of practice.
I should practice something better in my life and maybe get good at that.
Hundreds of times.
Now I should keep working on this.
So we got one movie to do next week, and it's gonna be The Crow. What's up, Paul DeNuzzo?
Paul DeNuzzo, shout out. I know that we had kind of teased it last week, but we're giving you your full shout out now, and next week is gonna be the week for you, my brother. When's the last time you watched The Crow?
When I was like six, probably. Exactly. Like when it came out.
Same. Like, I hope it's awesome.
My brother had it on VHS, like probably when I was seven. Nothing like that. It came out in 94. Paul DeNuzzo, thank you. You're a general in the Action Army. All of you petty officers, we appreciate your support as well. We'll be thanking some of you. Some of you guys have sent in your top five lists. Yeah. So on those Patreon videos, go to patreon.com/teamaction, and you'll be able to see some content going up where we're going to be talking about your lists, reacting to them.
Yeah,
and
we got a couple up there already. We got the top five Fincher movies that someone sent in. We got top five movie scores ever. So, like, guys, keep sending them in. We're going to have some awesome conversations about them.
Yes. Paul DeNuzzo, once again, thank you. We'll be covering your. If you want to call in on the show, be sure to contact us there. We'll have you call in next week. You can talk about the movie with us on the show. Otherwise, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, guys. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy. Once again, thanks to the generals, Andrew Hayes and Paul DeNuzzo.
And yeah, we'll see you guys same time, same place next week. Bye, guys. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.